since this is my last time to stand before you, I'll be leaving in the morning, so I'll get the opportunity to hear from others this afternoon, evening. I was going to tell you what an encouragement you have been in being here, and I know others had to leave, and I would like to express these thoughts to them as well, but you've been an encouragement to me. Not often that I get out beyond Mississippi, but every time I have, I've encountered great people, and you are certainly no exception to that, and it's been a joy to get to know people in this area, not only brethren that preach, but also the members of this congregation. I am impressed with the congregation and the work that it's doing, with the membership that is so involved, and of course, being associated with Wayne, and previous to that, I already knew the caliber of man that is preaching here, but it's a great location, great work that's being done. And I'm grateful that each of you has been here. And I pray that this work will continue. And I know that it will. I for one, I was glad to see someone taking pictures. Because you'll look back 20 years from now and you'll think, man, look at the beginnings of this. With polishing the pulpit, I wish we had done that 15, 14, 13 years ago. Taking pictures, set records, in a better way than we did. And it would have been to behold, and I'm glad to see that that's happening. I invite you to call us in the pulpit. If you've not picked up a brochure, be sure and do that. If at all possible, that is a great event. And I want to invite you to come. If you come through Southern Virginia, come and see us. We'd love to have you. We'd love to open our home up to you. And so, anyway, if you're up our way, we'd love to have you come and do it with us. Building up the local congregation. Don't fear in verse 1, James said, my brethren, be not many masters, knowing that you shall receive a greater condemnation. By accepting the challenge to preach, you have accepted a greater responsibility and a stricter judgment. But you have also accepted a better life and greater reward. Having accepted that responsibility, you have also encountered the responsibility to build up the local congregation. Part of your work. When Wayne gave me this subject, he said, take that wherever it leads. I don't know where it would have led you, but it led me to 2 Timothy. So that's where I want us to concentrate our study. I tell you, it's been good to be associated again with some men like Mark Bessel. Mark does a great job. I tell you, I've been enthused and built up by his messaging. I want to tell him I appreciate taking about half of what I was going to talk about last hour. But as Brother Holland's trying to say, there's no competition between lighthouses, so I'll approach it a different way from what he did, but I appreciate what he had to say. I want to look at 5 things that we're going to notice in regards to this. From Paul's words to Timothy, we can see that we build up the local congregation, number one, by your preparation. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 15, of course, familiar to us, study show thyself approved. Verse 21, if a man therefore, Second Timothy 2 and verse 21, if a man therefore purges himself from these, he should be a vessel and honor, sanctified, meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. Let's look at some areas in which, by your preparation, you can build up the local congregation. First, supplication. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17, pray without ceasing. Can't overemphasize, and such a great lesson that Eric presented the other day on prayer clauses. Preachers need a prayer clauses. Well, I was just delighted in hearing Brother Wendell Winkler talk about prayer, praise. Love to hear some men pray. I mentioned to Bruce a few moments ago, just a great prayer that he led. No wonder the disciples said to Jesus, Lord, teach us to pray. And they said, Lord, teach us to preach. Teach us how to lead singing. Teach us how to be perfect. Lord, teach us to pray. They had heard him pray, no doubt. Supplication. Secondly, education. The Bible here says study, verse 15. Education is a continual thing for preachers, of course. It is a constant avenue of sharpening your skills and learning. Let me encourage you to build up the local church by attending workshops like this and lectureships and in your private study, take advantage of other preachers. You're very blessed in this area because you have a number of congregations that enjoy sweet fellowship, great men who preach and men who have preached. Take advantage of that, especially those of you who are younger. lean on those men for their wisdom, for their ability, for their experience. And you have a great opportunity to do that here. As we were taught in preacher school, and I'm sure you were as well, take notes continually. Every fifth Sunday, we have our young men conduct the evening services. And I always take a notebook with me. I take notes. I can learn something from everyone who is prepared and who stands before me. And so take notes continually. Use those notes in your study and in your preparation. Be observant to things around you. A few years ago, where we are situated off of Main Street, the church building is located off of two main roads that come together. This is Stargate Drive, and this is Poplar, and this is Turner. Off of Main Street, so it's a horseshoe. You can get to our building by taking either road. And at Turner Road, the road most of us usually take, they're doing some repairs. And they put up a sign there that said, Rough Road Ahead. You know what most people did? They went to Pop. That's a lesson there. The Bible says, Rough Road Ahead. What's most people going to do? They're going to take another route. Be observant. That's education. You do that constantly and consistently as a preacher. I remember having a funeral one time, and the procession was long and went through a lot of traffic, and the progression was slow. And I began to observe things around me. I was in the truck by myself following the hearse, and I began to look at things. And from that, I went back to the office and wrote a sermon on lessons I've learned from a funeral procession. Just things I saw along the way. And I had that outline here. It's just a mission, just to give you an illustration of that. I saw a grandfather sliding with his grandson in the park. What I learned from that, and I've developed it more, but I learned not to let yourself go too old to do some things. You can always enjoy life. And the lesson was there, enjoy life every day. The other thing I saw was a blind man that was walking alone. It's an unusual thing sometimes. What's the lesson? He wasn't letting his limitations prevent him from doing what he wanted to do. He had somewhere to go, and he was going. He had something to do, and he was doing. Another thing that I saw was a sign that read, Home for Sale. And I know what they're talking about. There was a house for sale there. The sign said, Home for Sale. How many people have sold their homes? And that's for their meager price. And then four people's response to death. It's interesting to watch as people were walking on the sidewalk or driving toward the funeral procession. Some had respect for it. Some of them would stop. Others didn't. Others just kept going. What's the lesson? One day, we're all going to come to respect death. Well, be observant. Education is something that we do continually as preachers. And in our education, regardless of the classroom setting or just looking at things about us, it'll help the local congregation to grow. Supplication, education, third, determination. The Bible says to show thyself approved. 2 Peter 1:5, beginning beside this, giving all diligence, add your faith, virtue, to virtue, knowledge, knowledge, temperance, temperance, patience, patience, godliness, 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 charity. For these things being in abound, make it seem to be barren or unfruitful. And so on. That passage ends in verse 10 with the way in which it began, and had begun in verse 5. Wherefore, the brethren, giving diligence, make your calling and election sure. Diligence, determination, to show thyself approved. It begins and ends that passage with diligence. We need to be diligent. Supplication, education, determination, but another point, perspiration. A workman that needeth not to be ashamed. Perspiration. Don't be a lazy preacher. Oh, you give preaching itself a bad name. And I know that I'm preaching to the choir here. You guys wouldn't be here if you were lazy. Bible says in 2 Timothy 4:5, but watch thou in all things, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill thy ministry, and keep thy feet carried past pass. Well, that's the ESV, that's Eddie's standard version on that. The perspiration. Work hard. You know, I've never, and I don't say this boastfully, and I know some of you already thought to make the same statement, I've never worried about an eldership being concerned as to whether or not I'm doing my job. Because I've always told the elders, if I'm not doing my job, you'll know it. Because it will show in the pulpit, it will show in the complaints you get from other people, it's going to show in the way this congregation is progressing as far as my part of the growth of it is concerned. And they've been concerned about that. And so, perspiration. And fifth, and in that regard, by your preparation, evaluation. Rightly dividing the word of truth. evaluation. Constantly evaluate yourself and your preaching. That will help grow the local congregation. Keep records of your sermons and of your classes. Go back and review those. We look back and we can say, you know, it's been 3 years since I preached on the subject of love. And so keep records of what you do and how you do it, and that will cause you to be a more balanced preacher. That's going to help grow the congregation. I started several years ago in regards to that teaching, a lesson from every book of the Bible, and I'm up to Joel that I want to, and I told him that's job security because I'm going to keep on there. Well, I'll be there a while if they don't let me hold out that series is finished. But I don't do it every Sunday, just occasionally, a lesson from every book of the Bible. And so that keeps you balanced. That keeps you in the book. This past year, I handed out a congregational study survey. And I asked the congregation for feedback and input. What do you want to hear a lesson on? And I looked at my files, and I wrote every, I had the secretary go in and jot down every file that was in there. And I listed that as subject material. And I don't know how many there were, but I said, list 1 through 10, your priority in this regard. Beginning with whatever, angels and going through Zephaniah, A to Z. You'd be surprised some of the feedback that you get. And it gives you some insight as to what the congregation needs, what they want, what they're thinking about. Because, you know, many times we're wrapped up in our world. My children are gone and grown. I'm not into the grandfather stage yet, David. I haven't gotten that. But it's hard for me now to put myself in the shoes of Trent, who has a three-month-old daughter and who has that concern. It's hard for me now to put myself into the shoes of Chuck Horner and a bit of Star and some of these men who are more advanced in years. Because I'm in this portion of my life. And so that helps you in evaluating yourself as a preacher and the growth of the congregation as a whole. Seminary by your preparation. Point number two, in your proclamation. In your proclamation. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, been alluded to already, preach the word, be in season, out of season, and so on. In your proclamation. Now in regards to that, first, information. Let's look at how we preach and what we preach. First, information. Expository sermons are, of course, the best. Preach those regularly. They'll help you stay in the text and they'll focus the attention of the congregation there as well. But not only the text itself, but Bible geography. When was the last time you taught a class on the New Testament period? What a great job Dan did on that. I told him, I finished about 3 quarters ago teaching class on intertestamental history. Well, that was, of course, valuable to me, but just people couldn't, they'd never said that before. And they didn't realize some things. And they didn't realize that when you open the New Testament, it's a whole new world from when you close the Old Testament. Perhaps, as Wade Webster said, the most misunderstood page in the Bible is that when it separates from Malachi and Matthew. And so, balancing doing that, information, teach people from the text, but teach people matters in regards to Bible geography and intertestamental period. And of course, with our technology today, with PowerPoint and the maps that are available and the satellite images, I mean, you can make those places just come to life and help people to see those things. Two, about 4 or 5 years ago, I taught a class on a chronological survey of the Old Testament. I don't remember the exact point in time when that hit me, but the Old Testament is not written in chronological order. And I thought, no wonder the minor prophets didn't make any sense. Because I'm kind of, man, but if you, really, and I tell people this, we read the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. God sees the Bible from Revelation to Genesis. He sees the word from the beginning. If you start at Genesis and read through Nehemiah, you finish the Old Testament chronologically. The rest of it fits back into that. And help people to see that. Well, that's a part of that idea of information. And that's a part of your proclamation. And that's a part of helping the local congregation to grow. The third, or secondly rather, indoctrination. Not only information, but also indoctrination. Judges 2, 10 to 14, the book of Judges reveals some dark days for Israel. It begins with compromise and ends in confusion. That's the formula that will work every time. And it did for them. But we find in Judges 2 and verse 2 in the beginning that there arose another generation that knew not the Lord. And as a result of that, they departed from God and they served other gods. They had not known the works that He had done for them. What does that tell us? That we need to teach the fundamentals regularly. That there is always a new generation coming on the scene. And we need to teach the fundamentals regularly. Lessons for the youth, for example. I can still hear echoing in my head the words that Wendell Winkler mentioned about youth. Three things you need to teach them: their mission, their mate, and their master. You know, if we cover those three areas in regards to youth, we'll be covering a lot for them. Well, in regards to our proclamation, information, indoctrination, but thirdly, examination. Getting to some deeper subjects. Here's the last time we preached on biblical election, or really spoke on Christian evidence, dug down deep. When was the last time you spoke about the work of the Holy Spirit or engaged in the study of providence with the congregation? Challenge their minds. Don't stay in the shallow end, because if you do, more people are going to stay there with you. You see, we have to get beyond shallow preaching, shallow thinking, shallow praying, and shallow worship. You know, God's God will direct us and lead us safely to our places of abode. What did the Lord mean when He said, vain repetition? I don't know that it's vain, but it's certainly repetition. We need to get beyond some of those matters in our praying, in our preaching, in our thinking, and in our worship. Not only information, indoctrination, examination, but also reputation. Thinking about, of course, still in this area of our proclamation. We need to preach. We need to proclaim matters in regards to false doctrine, denominationalism. We need to make sure that we cover some of those areas. Current movements, the homosexual agenda. I remember about 10 years ago, I guess now, I preached a series on the homosexual agenda in youth. And at that time, I remember that there were only a couple of major corporations who had put into their workmen's information the idea of sexual orientation, had included that phrase. About 5 years later, I preached again on the homosexual agenda in youth, and I was amazed then at how many had included sexual orientation, and how many, of course, had advanced in the cause. We need to teach about those matters. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. That's a battle we're going to face. That is an area in which we are going to have to be alert, and we're going to have to know our stuff, reputation. But again, in the area of proclamation, transformation. I'm talking about our preaching. Now, what should my preaching consist of? All of these, but transformation, Romans 12, 1 and 2. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercy of God, to present your body as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind. They prove what is the good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. Some of you all have to remember, years ago, Ronco made everything years ago, didn't everything Ronco made. But they made a hamburger press. There was two plates, actually, that were hinged together, and you put a ball of hamburger in between those, and you could press that together. It had a little clip on it. And about 2 minutes later, you open that thing up, and there's a perfectly shaped hamburger patty. There's an illustration. Go to a Goodwill or go to a yard sale. Find you one of those things. Take it to pulpit with you. And demonstrate to people what it means to be conformed to this world. That's the word. Goes in as a ball of meat, and it comes out first. That's what Satan wants to do to us. He wants to conform us to the image of the world. But let it be transformed. Metamorphosis day. Well, it just rolls off the tongue. You know the word. It conforms to it. It pictures with ugly caterpillars spinning into a cocoon, and then after a process of time, in a few days, it comes forth a beautiful butterfly. Look at the difference between being pressed into this old mold, being transformed into a beautiful creature. You know, people look at a caterpillar and say, ooh, boy, that's ugly. Girls are afraid of them. But I've never known anyone to say, well, that's an ugly butterfly. And they're always lost, those being transformed. You see, that's a part of our preaching. We need to call for change in people's lives. I appreciate what Mike said about ethos, ethos, and logos, and pathos yesterday. Certainly, well, we need to include that in our preaching. And when we do this, examine what we're doing, how often we're doing it, and the way in which we're doing it, we got the congregation to grow, because we appeal in all of these areas. I'm not a shouter. I don't bang on the pulpit, and I appreciate men who can do that. But like we all said all along, we're different in the way in which we approach things. And that's the beauty of preaching. God's wise, isn't it? But every now and then, I come down when there's a need to do so. And I feel like when I do, people take it very seriously. Not too long ago, I preached a sermon entitled, "When Will We Stop Lying to God?" And I began by listing, and I began with this poem, "When Will We Stop Lying to God in Our Streams?" And I began to list the songs in our song book. Will work till Jesus comes. And I said, you know, if our song leader read that song this morning, every one of you would sing. But how many of you mean it? When will we stop lying to God in our songs? O land of rest, for thee I sigh, when will the moment come? You don't mean it. Lying to God in our singing. When will we stop lying to God in our praise? And I said, I'm not speaking against any individual who needs public prayer. But I'm talking about not only our public prayers, but our private prayers. Think about what you're praying to God. You're praying to God, Lord, give me an opportunity to be of service to you. And when the opportunity comes, you say, no, I'm too busy. You're lying to God. And so on. Transformation. That's what I'm getting at. I remember several years ago in another congregation, there was so much antagonism in the congregation. And I called for help, a meeting with the elders. And I had already printed out the sermon I was going to preach Sunday. And I put it before all of those men, and I gave each one of them a copy. And I said, this is what I'm going to preach Sunday morning, if I'm allowed to get into the pulpit. And they sat back and read it. And the first point, that sermon was entitled, On the Day of Judgment, What If? What If? The first point of it was, what if being an elder was more than just occupying a position? And it went from that point forward. To a man, they said, don't hold anything back. And I remember, again, please accept this in the way this is given. We had 48 responses that morning. Transformation. You've got to get those people live. You've got to understand them and know them. Notice the proclamation. Having a key to it. And on occasion, I'll go to the pulpit and I feel like Mike Vester when I can do this. And I set my Bible down there and stand in front of it and say, this morning is going to be, this is the Sunday, heart to heart about your heart. You need to talk about things. And it's not a didactic sermon, it's not expository, but it's a change. It's different, but it gets people's attention. What are we doing? Transforming people. That's what our proclamation has to be about, a transformation. Study in depth and teach about worship. Mike mentioned it earlier. You know, when we worship, we go before the throne of God. And you know, our singing is not a preparation for our worship. Our contributing is not an item that separates the Lord's Supper from the sermon. I preach a sermon on the most dangerous thing we do at church, 1 Corinthians 11. And understand that at church, how I mean that. The most dangerous thing we do at church. You know, about contribution, it's not fair that we violate the body of Christ when we don't give as we should. The Bible doesn't say that we hold in disdain the blood of Christ when we don't listen to the sermon as we should. Don't misunderstand. Those are important items of worship, and we should engage them with all our heart. But taking the Lord's Supper. Now, you eat the body of Christ without respect to it, you're eating damnation to yourself. Tom Holland says that the most difficult command God has given us to do is to worship. And I often say that the people who have the hardest time worshiping are mothers with little children, Bible class teachers, preachers. Why? Those mothers are wrestling those little ones. God bless them. I'm glad they do. Those Bible class teachers are thinking about what they've done or what they are going to do, whichever order your services are. Those of us who preach, we're thinking about what's before us. And you know, I need to remember to mention Sister So-and-so and welcome our visitors, and I've got this sermon, and we need to slow down and worship. We need to worship. Not long ago, I taught a class on worship. And I love what people are thinking. Worship? In fact, the deacon in charge of our adult education told me, he said, I want you to teach on worship next quarter. And I said, yeah, okay. And I got to looking at it, and I thought, worship in spirit and in truth. We worship. When we study about worship, what do we emphasize in truth? Oh, we can hammer home on instrumental music and why it's wrong. We can talk about listening to the sermon. We can talk about the Lord's Supper and what those emblems mean and all of that. But let's get down to brass tacks on in spirit. You see, in truth can be regulated and is regulated by God, can be regulated by the elders in this sense. That if somebody brought a mechanical instrument in, the elders can get it out. God doesn't accept it anyway. If somebody wanted to make a substitution of the Lord's Supper, the elders have their own notion. But the in spirit, no one can regulate that for you. That's something you have to do. In spirit is something I bring to the table. When do I prepare for that? And you know, take when someone gets up at the song leader and says, we're going to sing the number so and so to prepare our minds for the Lord's Supper. If you've waited for that point, too late. Teach your people about worship. When you get finished, let them know we've been before the throne of God. We're going to pray. We're going to do something on earth that's going to gain heaven's attention. And you know, when preaching is before us, we're involved in that. It's not a spectator sport. God's the audience, not us. We're the participants. When you sing, don't let those notes go from the songbook to your mouth and bypass your heart. In spirit. That's transformation. I've got to go further before we get behind here. Teach them about building better marriages and better homes. I wish I had time to say more about that. But let's look at it. Along with that transformation, another point, vaccination. We've got to teach them about worldliness. Avoiding the ways of the world and the wiles of the devil. You study your Bibles, and I think you'll find this to be true. The two subjects about which the Bible says more than any other. The Bible says a lot about faith. It says a lot about prayer. It says a lot about love. But it says more about your money and about your mouth than any other thing. Now think about the instances in which those are missing. Why? Because those are the two things that get us into trouble more than anything else. We need to preach about those. We need to vaccinate folks in regards to that. The Bible has forsakenly having led this present world. I understand the emphasis there is on the word present. Jesus didn't want to face the persecution and the coming death that Paul did. He wouldn't love this present world. But he still loved the world, in some respect. In Titus 2:11 and 12, the grace of God that brings salvation appeared in all men, teaching us, denying ungodliness, worldly love. We should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. Vaccinate your people against ways of the world, evolution, and on we could go. But another point, number two, motivation. When we're working on our proclamation, let's talk about motivation. Motivate them to be better spouses and to be better parents. Motivate them to work through difficult times. And oh, what a job B.J. Clark did in taking us down that path. Help them to overcome their fears. Revelation 21 and verse 8. A list of the occupants of the halls of hell. The first on the list, not murderers, not adulterers, not homosexuals, but fearful. What did one prophet man say? I was afraid. Teach people and help them and motivate them to overcome their fears. Their fear of teaching. Their fear of using the talents that they have. Unearth some of those great gems in the congregation. You know, that's proclamation. Building up the local congregation by your preparation, number one. In your proclamation, number two. Number three, with your participation. With your participation. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 6. Therefore I put thee in remembrance that thou stir up the gifts of God which is in thee by putting on of my hands. Now I realize in the first century context, what Paul is speaking there is that's in the miraculous in regards to Timothy. But the lesson, of course, is appropriate for us. In regards to that, with your participation first, application. Let me see in verse 21, that for which teacheth another, teachest thou not thyself. When I preach a sermon, the first person it hits is envy. When you preach a sermon, the first person it hits is you. Put self first in all ways. What do I get from this? You see, then you bring spirit, any spirit, to the worship process and preaching. Application. Secondly, visitation. Get out among the people. My older son is a youth minister, and we've talked about things to do and trying to help him along. And I told him, I said, when you start your work, I said, you take time and invest in those young people, and you go and visit those old people. I said, the ones in the middle, sure, you give them time, but they're busy. They're raising kids. They're building their businesses. They're growing their careers. They're busy folks. Those young people, you get down on their level. Those older folks, you give them a little time. And I guarantee you, the work will grow. People will love you. They'll cry when you leave. They'll rejoice when you come back home. They'll love you. Well, visitation. In Matthew 25:40, Jesus said, going to answer the king, said, of course, the those on the right hand, and as much as he's done, the least of these, my brother, he's done unto me. When you go to that nursing home and visit that elderly lady who is there, you're not visiting her, you're visiting the Lord. And much as you've done unto these, you've done unto me. Acts 9 and verse 4, Saul, my persecutor, stop me, Jesus said. Well, visitation. Third, association. So we're talking about our participation now in growing the local congregation. Application, visitation, association, hospitality. It's a forgotten commodity these days, because when we have gospel preachers in, we put them up in a hotel, and we go and pick them up for the services, and we leave them there the rest of the day and let them study so we can get some work done. Nothing wrong with that, but I enjoy being in the homes. I thoroughly enjoy the week of spending with Trent and Lisa and being in their home and getting to know them and getting to enjoy their family and getting to play with the two dogs and see little Ella. Hospitality. I mean, we need to be the most hospitable people in the world. Make your home a welcoming place. The red carpet is going to roll out for us here. I can speak personally and say that. Oh, what a hospitable place. And I appreciate those who have made it so. For years, we had an open house at Christmas. It was the Testament Westside. They gave us a $500 Christmas bonus every year. And Jimmy and I and everybody would go and spend $600 on open house at Christmas. Do more than we know. That's all right. We enjoy that. Opening up your home to people. Making an inviting place. Hospitality. Have some small and some large gatherings in your home. I make a pretty mean chili. And I have two pots that a whole pile with 4 gallons apiece. We make big chili. Put pots in the booth. We got a lot of people over. And that's easy enough to do. My wife doesn't have to do it. She doesn't have to be involved in that. We'll get styrofoam bowls and plastic cups, and we don't have much cleanup involved. But all the time we have. My wife's a great cake maker. She's known for her cake. Coffee and cake. It doesn't take much effort. But when you sit down at the table with someone, you get to know them. You get to know who they live. Hospitality then. In our association. I did a marriage class several years ago, and from that, the Making Marriage More Meaningful seminar came about. And in that marriage class, I would give them assignments every week. And at one point during the marriage seminar, or during the marriage class, we invited all the participants to the marriage class over to our house. And I said, but the one restriction is this. You have to finish this story. A funny thing happened on the way to being married all these years, ... They had a couple of weeks to think about that. And we had something to eat, and we enjoyed our time. It's all right, time for our stories. Same thing happened on the way to being married all these years. And we had the best time. We laughed, and we grew the couple. At the end of that, the men had gotten together secretly from the women, and we had bought a long stem rose for each of our wives. And we had practiced the song, slip my mind, it was a love song. come on, name one. I think we were going to do a video. But we practiced this song. And we had one guy who was a great musician, and so he played the piano. And we met in our house, and he was playing the piano, and we sang the song. And every one of us melted our wife's feet with our long stem rose. Oh, we were the man, you know. We had bottle of punk built up. What a great time. Hospitality. That's association. That's growing a local congregation. Application, visitation, association, evangelization. Go me means go me. I won't say any more about that one, evangelization. But another, reclamation. We have, in the past, had a restore campaign. We had people give us lists of all the people who need to be restored. People who have been with long term, people who have quit the church, people who have just simply faded away. Reclamation. That's a part of our job, is building the local congregation, sending cards and letters and so on. But again, demonstration. Here's another quote from the ESV, A Standard Version. Be ye doers of the word and not just preachers only. Okay? Now, it doesn't say that, but it's certainly implied, isn't it? James 1:22. Well, we need to be demonstrating that. But again, publication. Publication. That's a part of participation. Brother, watch your own bulletin article. Don't put them adapted and selected. Now, I know there are times when you can't help that. So I've been at West Side for almost 12 years, maybe 2 weeks in those 12 years, so I didn't write a bulletin article. I don't say that in a bragging fashion. Please accept it in the way in which it is given. But that helps you in your preparation, in your education. But it also gives us another means and opportunity of learning the congregation. Do this. Go look up the word so, S-O. I preached 5 sermons on the word so. It's an adverb of manner that means in this fashion or after this manner. The word so. Like you both know from the word so. Look up a phrase. If any man. Look that phrase up on these doors. Boy, there's a series of articles right there. Flash your own bulletin articles. Sermon outlines, and some of you probably do this, but pass out those outlines that have blanks and let the congregation participate. Well, fourth, talk about the participation. The fourth thing is propagation. Propagation. The things that thou hast heard of me, 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, 2 Timothy 4 and verse 5. And I'll have to quickly go through the dedication, number one under that. From your propagation. Propagation. Propagating. Dedication. Dedication to the Lord, dedication to the church, dedication to your family, your wife first and foremost. Tonight, my wife will go to Bible study, and in the seat where we always sit, she's going to find a card, and a Hershey's hug, and a Hershey's kiss. And I think she'll probably know where they came from. Well, I took them there before I left. I tell people, man, I try to do something every day to build my marriage. It might be something I do today that doesn't bring benefits for a month down the line. I'd like to tell you some stories about that, but we've got to go further. But that's a part of it. Dedication. Dedication to your family. Orientation. Orientation. We had a family that moved to Westside last year from Canada. They had never lived outside of Canada, so it took some orienting for those folks. Now he's a Bible class teacher. They are working. The congregation just accepted them with open arms. They're becoming oriented to American life. We had a deacon in charge of orienting new members. He gives them a tour of the building. Take a little while to learn my way around. Now that I'm leaving tomorrow, I think I'm going to go around this building now. But we orient new people to the building and show them how they can find a way around. Help people find a place. Again, duplication. Duplication. The things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, saints, and this out of faithful ministry, but each other's also. Preachers, are you duplicating yourself? We have had, currently have, one of our former deacons in the school of preaching. Now, I don't say that to pat myself on the back, but look for the potential in the congregation. Duplicate yourself. Not just once, but again and again and again. Are you bringing future leaders? We are involved currently in a leadership class at Westside. We have 3 elders. And we 3 elders are rotating and teaching that class. And we have invited personally by letter every man in the congregation. And we are taking the other classes, the auditorium class and the teenage class, rotating among those 3 classes in order that every man might attend that leadership workshop, leadership class. Why? Because we want them to see that we're trying to be leaders ourselves, but we want to duplicate ourselves too. Duplication. Well, through your preservation. Through your preservation. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 12. I know whom I have believed and have persuaded. He's able to keep that which I committed unto him against that day. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 14. Continue thou in the things which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned it. In that regard to preservation, number one, communication. How do you communicate to your people? I think, and you do this, birthday cards, anniversary cards, so on, the birth of the child, especially the first child that's born. Get into a letter to that couple and say, oh, what a blessing. I hope you bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Send letters to people at the anniversary of a death. That first anniversary. when that man has lost his wife in June and her birthday is in August, he gets a letter from you. There's nobody. Well, that gets where people are. When people have accomplishments, can I have a few moments? When people have accomplishments in their lives. We have a young man, Sam, who won the spelling bee. Send a letter. Yeah, man, that's great. I can't spell my own name sometimes. Well, what a great job. That built him up. You have the Tyler's baseball game. Send him a note after. Tyler, man, he's had a great game. Oh, hey, that's building people up. That's communication. Be an encourager. This piece of advice, keep the good things for the bad days. You're going to remember the bad letters you got. You're going to remember the bad. Keep a file of the good things. When you got a card that just, man, lifts you up and picks you up, through that box. And then on those blue days, get that card out again. Where that brother said, man, thank you. Thank you for preaching on that. Or that sister said, I really appreciate what you had to say. Well, communication. B, appreciation. Talk about that some. Third, imagination. I've got two things here that I want to show you. And let me just mention these for your benefit. Not only imagination, I'll get back to that as I close. Implementation. Be the leader in some things. Start some programs. I mentioned our first 100 days program. We have a program called Give Me Five, in which everyone who wants to contributes $5 a month. They give it to my wife. She keeps the record. At the end of the year, she gives them a receipt. And all of that money goes to work in Tanzania, John. Give Me Five. And we spend almost $700 a month. Over and above contribution. People just give them a five. Just implementation. Delegation. We have an in-house summer series in which we use our own people, use our own individuals there. And then continuation and maturation. Maturing a congregation. But as I close, continuation, maturation. As I close, I want to mention these two things for you. Imagination, I talked about that and I've lost one. Here's a sermon outline for you, and it goes quite imagination. I'm not talking about gimmicks. I mean, but occasionally changing things up, helping to grow the local congregation. Here's the sermon outline I gave them. It was already typed on it. Lessons from an envelope. Well, here's the blank number one. It says only a number one, envelopes come in all shapes, sizes, and blank colors, right? Filling colors. We talk about that, how we are diverse and how we appeal to people. We're all different. Blank number two. It must bear the proper blank. Name. Must bear a proper name. If this envelope is going to get where you want it to go, it has to have a proper name on it. We have to have a proper name. Number three, it must have the proper destination. Where are we headed? It's got to be on there. Number four, it must have the proper postage. What price was paid to send this note? What price was paid to get us home, right? As we mentioned earlier. Number five, it's only a container, but it must be cared for. When we were in Tanzania, We took pictures on our way over and all of that, and when we got there, we sent the film back. At the time, we couldn't get it developed there, John. We sent the film back, and when the people we sent it to got it, there was only an empty envelope. A hole had come in, and the film was lost. It was only a container. They're going to throw it away, but look at what it held. Those precious memories. This body's only a container, but look at what it holds. Point number six. In order to keep the content safe, you must keep the flap closed. Boy, there's some lessons now. From an envelope. And here's their lesson. Every time they look at an envelope, what are they thinking? One of those things. Lessons from a CD. And these are, you can get them by the hundreds. CD, what does it mean? It means, and I throw it down here, Christ decreed, CD. Christ died, Christ demonstrated, Christ desires. And this is the outline that they got. And they see other notes down. What happens when they look at a CD at work on Monday? They think about some of those things. Imagine it. Building the local congregation. I wish I had no time to think about some of those things, but maybe that'll hurt your appetite, and you can take it from there and do a much, much better job. Thank you, brother.